So picture this: a country where neighbors don't speak, the cameras never blink, and everyone's the hero in their own little algorithm. Not only are you watching the Twilight Zone, you're now living it. Rod Serling, the host of The Twilight Zone, used to step into a moody black and white frame with cigarette smoke curling up around him, and he'd tell you about some poor bastard waking up in a deserted town, or maybe a salesman who sells his soul for one last score. These days, you don't need the TV. You just need to open your front door or your browser. Same script, different props. So we used to tune into the Twilight Zone to scare the bejesus out of ourselves for 30 minutes, and then we'd go back to real life. But nowadays, real life is the scare. And we binge old episodes for comfort because the monsters at least had makeup and moral lessons. But out here, in this day and age, the monsters wear branded fleece or $5,000 suits and have venture capital funding or lobbyists and a bunch of jargon about changing the world. This country has turned itself into one long, unbroken episode with no credits, no theme music, and no catharsis for that matter. We've got the cheap sets with the decaying strip malls, the TSA lines, and endless beige cubicles where people spend half their lives. We've got the numerous tent cities appearing everywhere. And we've got the recurring characters, the grifter politician, the billionaire messiah, the algorithm whisperer, the TikTok influencer, and the twist ending is that the nightmare you feared was just the preview for next season. Okay, so let's talk about how we got here. Because dystopia doesn't arrive like a marching army. It more likely it shows up as a upgrade or like a loyalty program. You click accept because you're tired and distracted. And then one day you wake up starring in a show you didn't even audition for. Funny how that happens. Now, back in the good old 1990s, there was this psychedelic bard named Terence McKenna. You've probably heard of him. He was part anthropologist and part stand-up comic from another dimension. So he'd sit cross-legged on a stage, eyes glittering, telling anyone who'd listen that time and history was speeding up. Not just change, but like a cosmic quickening, a cultural spiral. Now, his word for it was pretty simple: weird. Things would keep getting weirder and weirder, until at some point they'd hit a singularity. The end of history. Or at least the end of history behaving itself. Now, you can dismiss this as a mushroom-induced TED talk before TED existed, but tell me you don't feel it now. The endless news cycles, technologies that obsolete themselves before you even download the update, whole belief systems going viral and then collapsing all in one weekend, people worshiping large language model gods that they've fabricated. The present moment has become like a strobe light. So McKenna thought that novelty was accelerating. And we've now turned it into a business model, because the Twilight Zone isn't a half-hour anthology anymore. It's running 24/7 with push notifications. Reality itself is now binge content. And sometimes you are the episode of the day. So he tried to warn us in his weird way. And not with jackboots or mushroom clouds, but just with a sly smile. And he would say, it's going to get weirder, folks, much weirder. And it turns out he wasn't wrong, because we've built an engine that runs on novelty and paranoia, and now it's dragging us along like a nightmare carnival ride that we can't get off. So buckle up or don't. The ride doesn't really care either way. All right. So let's talk a little bit about AI. So we wanted a magic genie of sorts to free us from all the drudgery. And what we got was something like a nosy butler that we called AI, and it never sleeps. It's always listening, and it's listening while selling your secrets to the highest bidder. Your phone guesses what you're about to type before you've even had the thought. Spotify dredges up the songs you were nostalgic for before you've even remembered high school. It's almost creepy. Not only do facial recognition cameras at the airport know who you are, they know where you've been, who you were with, and they know how guilty you look. This isn't even sci-fi anymore. This is just our reality now. So AI decides what you see and what you buy and what outrage is served up to you next. It's like the invisible director of your personal Twilight Zone episode. So, do you remember when therapy was actually private? Well, now you spill your guts to a chirpy chatbot that learns from your feedback while building a psychological profile that advertisers would knife each other over. And we taught these machines our weaknesses, like kids teaching a parrot to swear, and now we're shocked when it blurts it out at church or something. So we wanted convenience, and we got surveillance. We wanted connection, we got monetized loneliness, and pretty soon we'll just get replaced altogether. So, welcome to progress, I guess. All right, so speaking of surveillance, we grew up on dystopian fiction where the government bugged your house. But in reality, you bugged your own house and named it Alexa. And then you said thanks when it told you the weather for the day. And Big Brother turned out to be less about jackboots and more about dashboards. Real-time location tracking, Ring doorbells piping your neighbors' faces into the cloud, private companies swapping your data like middle schoolers trading Pokemon cards. Now, in some American cities, there are literally more cameras than people. And not only are they watching you, they're analyzing. They're reading you. At this point, we've got predictive policing software that flags high-risk neighborhoods. Surprisingly, always the poor ones. And alarmingly, these facial recognition databases don't even need warrants because the law is still running on Windows 95 or 98 or whatever. You are starring in a reality show with no opt-out button. And the prize is a coupon code for 15% off. And that's just the warm-up act. All right, moving on. So, every episode needs a set they don't show you too often. This one isn't the glass office tower or the smart kitchen. It's the sidewalk, the street. It's the tent city you speed past on the freeway with the windows rolled up. It's the alley behind Whole Foods where the algorithms don't deliver. So, we've built this world where a few billionaires can send cars into space while a few million people sleep under deteriorating bridges. The homeless aren't extras. They're the mirror image of our so-called success. Their props are shopping carts and Narcan kits. And their script is written in withdrawal symptoms and court dates. Addiction isn't a subplot. It's the central casting. Fentanyl, meth, booze, benzos, chemical lullabies for a system that spit you out. And we call it a crisis because that sounds temporary. But it's not. It's structural. Because when the rent outpaces wages and the healthcare costs more than a month's paycheck, and when trauma goes untreated long enough, a tent isn't a choice, it's an address. Now, in the old Twilight Zone, Serling loved to show you a man trapped in a nightmare town that he couldn't escape. But here, the town is real, and the trap is poverty plus addiction plus indifference. And there's no moral at the end, just a fade out and then another season. Okay, this is the part of the episode where you're supposed to ask, how did we get here? But I think you already know. policy decisions, austerity, private prisons, rehab mills, pharmaceutical kickbacks. All this stuff adds up to a perfect storm. And we built it. We live with it. And for now, we just scroll past it like it's background noise. Okay. This next part is what I call the funhouse economy. So the mirrors here are, of course, warped, but the cash registers are perfectly straight. Wealth flows up like helium, and debt flows down like sewage. Now, we've all heard the phrase, land of opportunity, right? That was the tagline. The fine print is for someone else. So the middle class used to be the main character in the American story. And now it's a ghost. Like a kid's chalk outline on a sidewalk, washed away by the next rainstorm. Wages have been stagnant for years. Housing is a speculative sport for hedge funds. People work three jobs and still play Russian roulette with medical bills. And meanwhile, some guy in a Patagonia vest calls himself a disruptor because his app lets you rent out your neighbor's dog. And it's not just inequality, it's extraction. And the gig economy isn't some cute side hustle. It's the 21st century version of piecework in a sweatshop. Except you supply the car, the insurance, the uniform, and of course the gas. The company supplies the app and a pep talk about flexibility. And you're free to be exhausted whenever you like. And the corporate power behind all of this, it's not a cartoonish Bond villain stroking a cat. It's a lobbyist writing the laws. Revolving doors between regulators and the regulated, with tax codes that look like they were written on the back of a mega yacht. Campaign donations aren't speech. They're just bribes with better public relations. And democracy is pretty much turned into a performance art with worse acting and higher stakes. And we're just the extras clapping on cue. I mean, you don't even have to be cynical to see any of this. You just have to read your own bank statement. All right, so once upon a time, the problem used to be too little information. I know that's hard to believe now. But now, as we all know, it's too much information. Far too much. It's been sliced, diced, and algorithmically arranged, so you'll never see anything that doesn't fit your existing hang-ups. And your feed isn't a window. It's basically a funhouse mirror reflecting back the ugliest parts of your own face. And the people who control that flow, mostly a handful of companies in Silicon Valley, they're not Bond villains either. They're engineers optimizing for engagement, which turns out to be just another word for addiction. I mean, we've got conspiracy theories blooming like mold in a damp basement, Facts are now optional. Truth is basically paywalled. Everyone starring in their own private Truman Show convinced the other half of the country has lost its mind. And all the algorithms agree because outrage keeps you scrolling day in, day out. And we've built a system where you can't even agree on what's real, let alone fix it. That's not an accident. That's actually the business model. All right. So if corporations don't need to seize power by force when you, well, corporations don't need to seize power by force when you are the one handing it to them at the checkout. So the Supreme Court said money is speech, and I guess now billionaires are poets. We've got private prisons where human misery is a profit center, and we've got pharmaceutical ads telling you to ask your doctor about pills you can't even pronounce the name of, for conditions you didn't know existed. And we've got food deserts next to boutique juice bars. And don't you dare complain. Otherwise, someone will call you entitled because you thought full-time work should keep you above water. This whole thing is like a giant convoluted circus, but a very profitable circus. And you're not the audience, you are the act. All right, let's talk about healthcare, or as it's marketed these days, pharmaceutical theater. So medicine commercials tell you to ask your doctor about those pills for conditions you didn't know existed. Half of those conditions are just marketing fiction designed to keep you scared enough to subscribe to the next round of copays. And meanwhile, the average American is one unexpected ER visit away from bankruptcy. Now, preventative care? Optional. Insurance bureaucracy? I think Kafka would be proud. And it appears that hospitals are just turning into for-profit casinos with white coats. And if you try to fix your own health, you're guilty of both stupidity and entitlement. It's a system built on fear, confusion, and the occasional manufactured miracle drug, which still produces some nasty side effects and costs a small fortune. Okay, so now we're going to move on to criminal justice. And this is, you know, a important part of the USA Twilight Zone dystopia. So mass incarceration, the rates of it make the USA a global outlier. Private prisons are now an unholy marriage of capitalism and misery. The more people you can stuff into cages, the fatter your quarterly profit. And don't think that reform changes anything. It's really just a revolving door that occasionally spins reformers into oblivion while leaving the machinery humming along quite nicely. And policing, it isn't just flawed. It's optimized for control and profitability, of course. So minor offenses are becoming major life events, and parole boards and bail systems and probation fees make survival a high-stakes game that you didn't agree to play. And the best part is, everyone pretends the system is fair because it's just easier than admitting that it isn't. So, you see that dystopia isn't just the gadgets and the dysfunctional gig economy or the news feed that's feeding you conspiracy theories. It's also the air, the water, the hospitals, the cages. And when you combine these elements with AI and social algorithms and a system that is now a plutocracy that thinks empathy is a tax loophole, you start to understand the show you didn't ask to star in. But here you are. Okay, so let's talk about the invisible rulers. No capes, no thrones, just lines of code, deciding what you see and what you buy, who you date, and what news makes your blood pressure spike just enough for you to need medication. These algorithmic overlords, they know you better than your therapist, and they cost less than your coffee habit. Now, your feed isn't really a reflection of reality. It's a reflection of what will keep you scrolling and clicking and maybe rage tweeting it to strangers on the internet. It's the puppet master behind your outrage and your fleeting joys. And you willingly hand over your mind every time you engage with the online marketplace or with social media. So we've pretty much turned free will into a loyalty program. And then we come to democracy, or what passes as it. Now, politics is at this point more like professional wrestling with worse acting and higher stakes. Campaign donations are just legalized bribes with PR departments polished enough to make it look like patriotism. And now we have gerrymandering on the rise, which is turning voting into a participation trophy sport. Everyone gets to show up, but half the game is rigged before the first whistle even blows. We've got debates that feel and look like improv theater, and laws written to protect the rich while the rest of us applaud like we're watching some kind of magic trick. And the weirdest part is that it seems most people still believe it's all real. It's not just a circus. It's a circus where the clowns collect your rent and your data and ultimately your hope. And let's talk some more about the pharmaceutical stage, because it's a big one. Now, these commercials don't really sell pills. They sell panic and fear. Ask your doctor, insert impossible to pronounce drug, is it right for you? Fabulous. Now you're a character in a constant commercial for your own anxiety. And if you don't take the pills, you're irresponsible. If you do take the pills, you're basically a lab rat with a credit card. Everything around you now is scripted and meticulously edited for engagement and profit. And on top of that, it's a control mechanism. You're not actually starring in the story of your life. You're in someone else's streaming feed, and it's endless. Okay. So here's where it gets truly Twilight Zone weird. Reality isn't necessarily broken. It's optional. So we've built this world where every opinion, no matter how absurd or untrue, no matter how stupid it is given a platform. And thanks to algorithmic curation, confirmation bias is now rampant. Filter bubbles aren't just bubbles. They're like entire galaxies where gravity only pulls you toward a black hole of outrage and certainty. So, conspiracy theories not only rise because people are gullible, they rise because the system rewards them. So that means ad revenue and social validation flows to the loudest, most alarming, and oftentimes dumbest ideas. So the problem isn't really the theories themselves so much. It's that the theories are now in the main storyline, right next to the news reports and the policy updates, right there next to the science. And nobody knows what's real anymore. Because we have a crisis of trust. All right, so some of you may remember that not too long ago, we actually used to share a baseline reality. Crazy, right? You knew that snow was white, grass was green, and you knew that taxes existed whether you liked it or not. But now, even the basics are negotiable. Did the climate report say the oceans are rising, or it's a hoax? Well, that depends on who you follow. Did a politician lie or exaggerate or just speak performance art? Who can tell anymore? And the effect, it isn't just confusion, it's paralysis. When everyone disagrees on what's true, nothing gets fixed. Things don't get made properly anymore. And the people in charge, they love this because it turns out that chaos is profitable. And a population that argues over the sky while the ground is sinking is easy to manipulate. You're too busy yelling at strangers or bots online to notice your house is on fire. Now, the big reveal that's hiding in plain sight is that human beings have always loved stories. But now we live inside one that we didn't choose. Because the algorithms write the plot and the corporations cast the roles. And then the politicians put on a fake performance and direct the drama. So you're trapped in a narrative optimized for your obedient engagement and your fear. And you just keep on applauding because you think it's entertainment. And I guess in a way it is. I mean, it's absurd, it's cruel, and it's hilarious if you're dead inside enough to laugh. But this is where the real danger lives in the quiet normalization of the nefarious and surreal. So the Twilight Zone used to give you a moral punchline. Today, that punchline is that there is no punchline, only more episodes. Okay. So if the economy is a funhouse, then the environment is the basement you don't want to go into, but you can't ignore it because there's another tornado coming. And look, it's irrelevant whether you believe climate change is human-made or not. It's happening regardless. And it's absolutely factoring into the dystopia that's unfolding. There are communities choking on pollution while big corporations write these checks to green initiatives that are smaller than the bonus for a CEO's private jet. We've got increasing hurricanes, wildfires, floods, drought that have all become the new neighborhood HOA disputes. Except nobody's taking minutes, and there's no insurance company that's going to actually cover any of the damage. Climate change isn't coming, it's here. And like all good dystopias, it's invisible until it punches you in the lungs or drowns your street or turns your home to ash. And people feel powerless. Because who's going to stop big oil? You? Me? The politicians? The activists? The rest of us? We're just scrolling through TikTok while our towns slowly float away. Okay. So here is the part where I ask, what do you do when your world is a perpetual episode of the Twilight Zone and the credits never roll? Well, first, accept that you are living in the realm of the absurd, because denial is only going to make it worse. And this isn't cynicism. Think of it as clarity. Alan Watts would tell you that the universe doesn't care about your plan. And Rod Serling would probably remind you that the monsters are already in the house. Now you can either scream or learn to see the comedy in it. I, for one, vote for the comedy, however dark it might be. So the first thing I would suggest, start with what I call small rebellions. You know, I want to start with this statement. You can't give your life more time, so give your time more life. Start tiny. Cancel just one unnecessary subscription. Stop feeding the algorithms. Walk past the checkout and talk to a cashier like a human being. Get offline more. Have meetups where the phone isn't even allowed, or it's at least turned off and out of sight. Try to grow something, a plant, a garden, paint a wall, try to repair something on your own. Read a book that doesn't have a comment section. I think these small acts of autonomy are like the tiny revolutions against the invisible directors of your life. And I think tiny revolutions can lead to larger revolutions. All right, the next thing is to protect your mind. Now, your attention is the only thing you truly own. So try to reduce noise, turn off notifications, and reclaim time that, you know, the algorithms are trying to monetize. Read books that make you uncomfortable. Watch documentaries that challenge your worldview. Listen to podcasts. And have conversations that they don't have to go anywhere as long as they're honest. You know, the AI doesn't need to know what you think. And frankly, neither do most people. All right. Build real connections. Yeah, I said it. Despite all the dystopian chaos, humans still work better together overall. You know, talk to your neighbors, listen more than you broadcast, cook a meal for someone who doesn't owe you anything. So it's not always about saving the world. It's about just not letting the world eat you alive. All right. The next thing I would do is question everything, and especially work on exercising critical thinking. You know, we have a critical thinking crisis. So instead of a knee-jerk reaction to something triggering, pause and then reflect first and respond after looking at it from various perspectives, including the ones you don't necessarily align with. And remember, skepticism is your oxygen. Question the news, question authority, the algorithms, the gurus, the politicians, etc., etc. This is how you stay lucid when reality is performing professional wrestling. All right. The last thing is accept the absurd and then move anyway. So here's the final little twist. You can't stop the cameras, not anymore. They're practically omniscient. You can't banish the algorithms. You can't make the politicians suddenly competent or corporations ethical overnight. But you can choose what you engage with and how you react and what you value. There's a freedom in realizing the world is absurd, because then every small intentional act becomes a tiny rebellion. And every tiny rebellion is proof that you're not just another character in someone else's episode. So, yes. Maybe the neighbors are silent, the cameras never blink, and the algorithms know more about you than your therapist, but maybe you can still laugh about it while eating some popcorn. And then try to carve out a little corner of sanity in all the madness. And I think, you know, if more of us tried to do this, I don't know, maybe things would change. Gotta start somewhere. So the Twilight Zone, it didn't end with a moral for everyone. It ended with a thought lingering in your head long after the screen went dark. So consider this your credit roll. Only the show keeps running, and somehow that's okay. All right. That's all I got. Thanks for watching.